Medicine Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom. That you have a nickname and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easiest for us to collect. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. And welcome to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. I'm your engineer and producer, JP. Simon Parks, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, engineer. I'm very well, thank you.
I'm just an engineer. Just me. No, actually, I'm so stoked because last night I tried out the new mixing desk and I had 8 channels of music all coming through it and the effects and everything worked really well and everybody says, oh, what a fantastic sound it had. So I was really pleased and I had a nice evening just listening to a band fixing the music up, so it sounded really good. I'm just so stoked with that. So you caught me in a good frame of mind, Simon.
Oh, does that mean all the other times you've been in a bad frame of mind?
Well, you know, sometimes there's a lot of time when I'm just par. just par, you know. So, that's fine. So we're above par today. So
excellent.
How are you doing in terms of, how are your pars, Mr. Parks?
You mean my grandpa? Right, here's some news for everyone. You, I think, did an interview a few days ago regarding the explosion at S4. Was that you?
Yes, with Patty Brassard and Max Steele.
Right, I didn't actually, I regret to say I didn't hear it, but I was told that you'd done that. And I think that the general debate was whether it was amongst the people who are unenlightened, was whether it was a corn fire or something else. But I wanted to add a little bit into it. I haven't heard the interview, and if what I'm going to say is just copying that, then just say so, and there's no point in me carrying on. I received one text and one email on the subject. It wasn't yesterday, it must have been 2 days ago. One person who'd actually heard your show and immediately sent me a text to say, you know, what do you know about this? But about the half a day or so before that, I'd had an email from somebody, and my understanding is that a weapon around about 2 to 2.2 kiloton range, but of a neutron type. Now, I'm sure some of our listeners will know that when a neutron device explodes, it leaves a sort of an eerie glow over the landscape. And I've been told that the pictures, which were only taken on a mobile phone, didn't really show that, but that's probably because it was days old. Also, the type of reinforcement that is used over these facilities is not just concrete and steel. There's a whole range of things which tends to reduce those sort of emissions. I have been told, it's unconfirmed, that something did explode at what is known as S4. And this is the bit that you may already know. A group of individuals, humans, were in collusion with some intelligence in S4 to stage a coup. The whole range of the military, who usually support them, in this instance didn't, because it would be the end of their paychecks. And so people who actually have never really got on with each other, decided to put all their differences aside and to basically take out part of S4. If people think S4 is destroyed, that's not the case. There is a cloning center. There is an individual place where materials can be made which could be used to not make an army, but could replicate a small number of certain things. And that has been taken out. It wasn't a briefcase bomb, because you cannot get anything in. My understanding is something was teleported in. In fact, it's the only way something could get in there. So that's the extra bit of information, which is unconfirmed. What I mean by unconfirmed is I have only ever gone public when I receive information from two sources. One is off-planet, and one is from the security group. I've only received one. I haven't received the double, but they're breaking my own golden rule simply because other people are making reference to it. So people are calling it a mini nuke. It's a small neutron device. So that's what I wanted to say on that. So was any of that new or different?
Yes. Well, particularly the detail about the like you say, you know, there's only one way in. And that's through teleportation. And so you have to be quite an, well, actually you don't have to be quite an advanced race. We had teleportation in 1943, didn't we? Anyway, so
great big ship.
Yes, that's right. So, teleportation, not such a problem, not so impossible. And was it down in the very lower, depths where the, you know, the sort of non-human areas, or was it in the human areas? Do you have any idea what level it was?
Right. It was, you know, you go through human area, then there's a no person's land, an area. And then when you go further down, it's all automatically protected. It isn't guards below a certain level. It's all electronically protected. So it's below the level of human guards. But there are, or there were, very unusual exotic devices there, which some of these off-planet entities, you know, they can't survive without them, or they're very much part of their working. That, I understand, has been targeted, which means that they don't have the capability to give assistance to any psychopathic humans who want to stage a coup. So it was very much similar to 1944, when the German military tried to blow up Adolf Hitler. Only did it because the Russians were on the doorsteps, and it was obvious that you know, they were going to lose. And in the same way, excuse me, a group of people who up to about 3-4 years ago have been supporting the decisions have now decided that you know, they are not going to play ball anymore. So regardless, it actually was a positive move. So that's the first thing. The second thing, before we get on to our questions, excuse me, last year on the radio show, on our radio show here, JP, I made mention that the American fleet, particularly the 6th Fleet, which I suppose is still the largest in the world, but the American fleet combined, which is the biggest navy in the world, was no longer buying its provisions when it stopped off at different ports with United States dollars. But at that time, I didn't know what they were paying with. So if they were going to Saudi Arabia or India or somewhere like that, they were obviously having to use, I don't know how many millions of gallons of diesel for the aircraft carriers, but there's also the provisions of the food, the water, etc. But they weren't paying in dollars. Well, I've just found out that they're actually paying in silver. They are actually paying in silver. And I've also been told that the Fed and the elite are so convinced of a financial collapse in America that they are going to try to run a second currency in order to try and bridge the gap, which will be, as in historically, the silver dollar. So they've been squirreling away, which very few people picked up, except the bullion markets, when silver started to spike. The price of silver hugely went up. The states have been buying secretively vast amounts of silver, and they are coining, as we speak, silver dollars, exactly as they were in the days of the Wild West. So there is a precedent here for the Americans to use silver. The idea is that if the paper dollar collapses, the Americans can move to a silver-backed currency. So again, that's very important, because that means that they are predicting their own economic demise very soon. So again, that's a little bit of information there, Jake.
How very interesting. You know, I was on eBay the other day, as you do, and I was looking at silver and wondering what the price of silver on eBay was. So, and I saw this thing, and it was at one of these auctions, and it was a triple nine coin. No kidding. 5 inches wide.
Good Lord.
Weighing a kilogram.
Oh, 2.2 pounds.
Yeah. 60 pounds.
What?
I paid £60 for it.
You did very well, sir.
I think I got a bargain. But anyway, I don't know who's going to, you know, this is like that thing in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the Galactic NIMBY, which is like 13 miles wide. This is like the only coinage of the currency. Right, okay, people are trying to call in. We don't really take calls because that would be crazy if we took calls.
I think the thing is that people are trying to call me as well.
Maybe one day we'll do a call-in show. But
I think you should. I think the thing is, JP, for those who are listening live, the news, the information I've given them regarding the currency and S4 Area 51 is breaking news, and it's very up to date. There's some elements which are new, and you won't find that on the internet anywhere. I can tell you that. And so I suppose if people are interested in that and they follow it, then their immediate reaction, I suppose, is to try and get hold of the radio show and try and talk. Mm-hmm. So maybe one day we could do a sort of a thing. Yeah, why not? When you're feeling strong enough.
Yeah, feeling strong and tough and powerful. So listen, where shall we start? Shall we now? There was something else. Oh yes, yeah, Studio 9 Jam on YouTube. Is where you find Simon's shows. Also on simonparks.org, there are always links in to where the show is, and the Facebook group. Simon, do you have a kind of outward-facing Facebook presence, as it were?
No, I don't. The Facebook page was started up, and it's not actually my Facebook page. I allowed other people to set it up who wanted to talk openly and as a group, but I don't go on to that Facebook page because it's difficult, really. I understand how important Facebook is to many people, but because it was set up by the CIA, I'm always very fairly cautious, so I don't actually play an active role in the Facebook, but I know that others do.
I've actually trained Facebook to give me the adverts of things that I actually like to buy. Because you know, by microelectronic things and PIR detectors and stuff like that. So
it's very good. Yeah. Well, you know, while the economy is still working, it's very handy to get stuff from China, and eBay is a very, very good place to buy stuff that comes through from China.
Exactly. And by the way, sorry to interrupt, but there's something really important, which is shoes. China makes all the world's shoes, and if the Chinese currency goes up, we're going to pay a lot more for our shoes. So get onto eBay and get your Chinese shoes now. That's my advice. Sorry, Simon, to bust in.
You're right. The Chinese produce 75% of the world's shoes, 75%. Now, when the economy goes down, and it is going to go down, there is a wonderful opportunity here for men and women in every Western country to start producing anything from spades, buckets, shoes, because it will be cheaper to manufacture and buy shoes or saucepans or spades that are made in this country than to import. And the changes that are going to occur will be a knife and fork will be of more value than a mobile phone, because we are going to be shifted back in time in terms of our value-based system, and we'll start to do what my grandparents called make, do, and mend. So in other words, you had a pair of socks, and it had a hole in it, well, you sewed it up, you darned it so you could use it. But nearly everyone now doesn't bother darning their socks. They throw them away. That culture is going to change, and we're going to be in a position where we've got to make things last. So, yes, I have actually been buying lots of shoes. So it's not a frivolous statement, JP. You're absolutely correct, because we may be facing a situation where the Chinese market says, well, your pounds or your dollars are worthless. So instead of 20 bucks for a basic pair of shoes, it's going to be 60. So I want people to think about this and to realize that many things that are going to be imported from the gold currency countries, that's Russia, China, India, and a couple of other Western countries, they will turn around and say, you know, your currency has no value. So if you want to buy something from us, it's going to be 3-4 times what you paid for it. So JP, that's a really important point.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, it's just bubbled up in me, and I had to jump in and interrupt, because it really occurred to me that this is, well, like you say, it's really important. Shoes are really important things, and they're currently cheap. Buy them now, and remember where you heard it. There you go.
One other thing, JP. I'm sorry, because there's been a lot.
Problem. Not a problem. There's a lot going on, I know.
There is a lot going on. I just wanted to say, so a very, very good friend of mine sent me a message saying, you were right. He said, you were right, you were right. And I said, well, what do you mean I'm right? He said, you were talking about this last year. So I said, what on earth are you talking about? And he said, you remember last year, Simon, you were warning about the government's trying to ban vitamins and vitamin supplements. And I said, yes. And he said, well, you're right. So I was a bit peeved, and I said, well, you know, I only go live and public with something when I know it's right. But what had happened is he'd actually come across, and it's on YouTube, there's an American-sponsored, so it's a government-sponsored information video. And in 3 days, it received 1 million hits. 3 days. And this video, which I'll send you the link in the next couple of days, JP, and you can put it on the site, it's on YouTube, actually says eating or taking vitamins gives you cancer. It actually says taking food supplements and vitamins give you cancer. And I predicted, and it was on our radio show, JP, that the elite would attempt to ban all vitamins in the Western world, and then they were going to irradiate food over and above what they do already to totally take out any nutritional value. So the fact that they're now running government-sponsored information videos, they are trying now to move the public into a position where they don't want to take vitamins. So it is the agenda that we're seeing rolling out. And, you know, when I go live, or when I do a radio show or something like that, then I don't shoot my mouth off. I'm not one of these people that sort of just says whatever comes into his head, or, you know, gets very carried away and starts saying things that aren't going to happen. I only go public with what I know is going to occur, because there are too many people in our industry who say things and then they get caught out, you know. And of course, it doesn't do any good, even if they're very genuine, because nobody will listen to them again. And when they have a warning, they won't get listened to. And, you know, if our listeners who go back with everything that I've predicted, there isn't one thing that hasn't come to fruition. Now, that's not me being, you know, big-headed or full of ego. That's actually a truth. Everything that I've said has happened. And so I'm not at all surprised that now the governments are moving to ban vitamins throughout the Western world. They'll start in America first. So, look, that's my latest up-to-date news, JP. I'm sorry to have gone on. So let's go through with the questions.
Oh, not a problem, Simon. I think, you know, it's really important to have the news section. It's not to be, you know, skimped on, and because, you know, you got intel from your people. Yes. Or, well, I mean, who, here's the thing. You've got these different connections, and everybody says, oh, the reptilians, and oh, the this and all the that. Are you a spokesperson, or are you, your own man, and you have these connections? What's your relationship?
In terms of the reptilians, they can't help themselves. They brag. And often when they brag, they give information away. In terms of a mantids or mantis, they're far more thoughtful and their agenda is quite considerably different from that of the reptilians. Because the human race and the mantid race is very, very closely connected. So the mantid race has an emotional and a creational attachment and a evolutionary attachment to the human race, whereas the reptilians have none at all. They're just a parasitic group. And so that's the off-planet mob. The on-planet people are far more everyday sort of people, you know, people who do very good jobs, you know, protecting citizens around the world and doing all the stuff that they do. We don't really talk about them very much. So if I was a spokesperson, I would have no leeway. I'd have no freedom. I would just be the man that reads the news. So I'm a person who receives information and then feels duty-bound or honour-bound to pass that, because if I didn't, and somebody will say, well, you knew about that, why didn't you say something? Because that could have saved us a lot of grief and heartache. So I will always give the information, providing I've had it verified. I will always give that information out simply because people need to know. And what they do with that is up to them. But if they act on it and they prepare themselves, then I've done everything I can and I can say, you know, I did my bit. And if they take it seriously and they do what they do, then they've done their bit as well. So I'm independent. I have and this isn't being ego, I have a unique position. And that's not big-headed, because people know that I'm not like that. I have a unique position. That's why I'm still alive. And I fully still totally don't understand it, but I know what I have to do. And what I have to do is to alert the people who are prepared to listen and say, you know, here's another piece of information to add to the pile you already have. Now you go and do with that what you will. So I hope that answers it, JP.
Okay. So I don't know if that, sorry, there's things falling over. I want you to take a breath and let's relax and get into the questions, shall we?
Okay, go on then.
This is from Jenny Campbell. Simon Parks, I recently woke from sleep to see a globe with the grid on it.
Oh, okay.
This was see-through, so could see the room through the globe. The wall was lit, and along the wall was long broken lines of light about 30 centimetres in length, about a foot long.
Yeah.
I immediately looked to see if there was something projecting this and saw a black roundish out of shape something near the globe. Can you tell me what this means or why I saw it? Thank you for answering many questions on your show that have bothered me for years.
Okay. We can't know because... we can't see this person, but I would assume they were fifth dimensional. So the questioner may be fifth dimensional Palladian or sixth dimensional Lyran. It will be obviously a representational of the grid, and I would love to know whether this grid looked as if it was complete, because my information is now there are a number of holes, energetic holes appearing in the grid. So it's a shame we can't find out, because it would be nice to know if this grid showed faults or fractures in it. But it's been projected to this person because this person has some role to play now or in the future. You know, when something is shown to a person, it is shown for a reason. There's no coincidence. It doesn't happen. Nothing is coincidental like that. I'm unclear whether Source itself has made this image available, or whether it's a fifth or sixth dimensional race. And that's why, in order to answer that question, I would need to see a picture of the person or talk to them to know whether they were Palladian or Lyran. it also would be very interesting to know what job this person did or what their energy skills were, because there is a message in that. So she's been shown the earth surrounded by the grid that traps people, souls, and the question is whether this image is showing that the grid is deteriorating. So yeah, that's what it is. So I can't do any more without a picture of the person or talking to them. But that's a very positive image in the sense that it's trying to convey something. The questioner also talked about a dark object which he thought might be projecting this. If it's coming through a little portal, the dark pardon?
Sorry, audio glitch. Go ahead. The dark object.
Yeah, sorry, it's probably just the National Security Agency trying to...
No, it was me. It was me.
Ah. If the dark object was like a little black hole, like a pinprick, then what we have there is a portal, and it's been projected through from the portal, but we couldn't tell which dimension it's come through from. So really, in a case like this, I would need a good 3 to 4 minutes question and answer session with this person to really give the listeners, the audience, a much clearer understanding. But that's fascinating, and it's genuine.
You know, this might be a kind of thing that we would do on that kind of show, on a call-in show, that you actually took maybe 10, 15 minutes to talk to a person and
yeah,
do a bit of very light, not in depth, but a very light kind of overview just to show, because sometimes people just need a bit of reassurance to say, yeah, well, actually, this is the right way to do it. You know, and
yeah,
it can take a very short period. Yeah.
JP, but it's also that the listener or the observer doesn't always identify the key points. And when I talk to them, I can tease out information which they hadn't thought was relevant, but is incredibly
absolutely
important to build it up. So, yeah, that's something that I would be very happy to do.
Well, there's the format.
Right.
Got the format. So here we go. Now, interestingly, I was playing this jazzy music from the early 60s, the big band theme tunes and things like that, Northern Soul. And, the guy who did the James Bond theme was the John Barry Orchestra. Here's a question from John Barry, but probably not the John Barry, but from Wales, living in Holland. So, there you go, John Barry. Hello, JP and Simon. Thanks for your services to humanity. Keep up the good work. I heard that when the founder of McDonald's left the business to his two sons in the late 1940s after he passed away, the two sons were apparently approached by two guys in suits and made the sons an offer to have their restaurants put in every major city in the world. As you can see, they must have accepted the offer, even though I'm not sure what the two sons had to do in return. I can only guess. My question is this. If those guys in suits were Illuminati, could this have been the first stage in their master plan to weaponize our foods and then use the likes of McDonald's as a pawn in their game? Thank you.
Okay, we have to be careful because we can't actually on live air say that, you know, if you eat McDonald's, you become ill, because then what happens is a gentleman turns up with a piece of paper called a writ, and then you end up having to deal with a huge amount of... hassle. What I will do, though, is say that there's no difference between McDonald's and Coca-Cola. And it's worth just quickly going about through Coca-Cola. During the run-up to the Second World War, Coca-Cola was successful, but it wasn't, you know, all world-encompassing. During 1943, there was a very well-known general called Eisenhower. Went on to become even more than a general. And he wrote to whoever was then the politician in America in charge of the welfare for the troops. And he said, I think every American soldier should have access to a bottle of Coke. And what people don't realize is that Coca-Cola bottling plants were built in France when the Americans and the British, but mainly the Americans, stormed all the beaches and were fighting the Germans in France. The elite ensured that Coca-Cola became a household name. The elite ensured that they were forever going to have a massive market. Now, in the case of McDonald's, which I know something about, but not a huge detail, was that if you want to introduce something to a mass market, then you can only do it through fast food. And so you need, remember, America's the home of the hamburger. You need an organization that you have a say in. So you would fund it and you would give certain privileges, and the result with that would be that you would have an outlet in every city. So I'm not going to say that eating McDonald's is bad for you, because this time I have enough to worry about without litigation. But what I will say is that there is no coincidence that a fast food outlet is in all the huge urban areas, not in the rural areas, very much so. So the person's on the right track, but I couldn't quite use the same language that they were using.
Thank you very much. Okay, now, everybody says that I'm far too loud, and I'll just back off my system.
We'll have to stop singing.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was doing the sound engineering last night, not singing. Oh, I don't know. I can't sing soul. Let me just adjust this microphone a second. Let's turn down. Let's try that. Okay, well, let's hope that that's turned a little way down and feels a bit better. Okay, but you can still hear me, okay, can't you?
Pardon?
Oh, Simon. Thou jest. All right, so look. I can see that. Why am I that? Yeah. So, yeah, I need to turn you up over here. I've just installed a new mixing desk. And can you give me a count to five, Simon? Have I lost you now completely? Simon? All right, so that is interesting. Okay, right, I seem to be back on the air.
Are you there?
All right.
See, I told you we shouldn't have spoken about McDonald's.
See, we shouldn't mention McDonald's and how... Anyway, I have a thing, it's called the Nung. It's a little concept of mine that there's a parasitic entity that is formed out of yeast. You know, when you leave a sandwich for 2 weeks, you get these purple hairy threads. And that,
you know, I've never left one for 2 weeks, but I'll take your word for it.
You couldn't leave a sandwich for 15 minutes. Well, that's the thing. It's the root of addictions, and particularly to beer and bread. It's a parasitic entity that affects us all and is a nano weapon from ancient times. But that's a long story. But really, I hope everybody's gotten me. I'm not so loud anymore, and that Simon's actually. Simon, do you want to give me a speech for 5 seconds?
Well, a speech for 5 seconds.
Yeah, 5 second speech. This should bring you up to a suitable audio level.
All right. Well, so unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, it gives me great pleasure to name this ship the JPEWI. God bless her and all who sail in her. How's that?
God bless her, mate. All right, thanks a lot, Simon.
That's because for American listeners, it was Her Majesty the Queen's birthday. So I was very irreverent, and because I'm not a great supporter of the Queen, I have to say. So I just wanted to give my best wishes to Her Majesty by launching the ship.
Yep. Hang on. I had one of those. I can never find the right one at the right time, because the list is too long. Oh, there we go.
Ah! Well, the boat's gone. It's too late now.
Yeah, that's right.
Missed the boat.
Yeah. Anyway, so meanwhile, back at the enormous list that I'm wasting my time over. Right, let's go back. This is from Vipul Mehta. Dear Simon, with love from India, with deepest gratitude and appreciation, thank you for teaching so many things in the past year. My question, you have explained us of big change in 2016-17. Also, you have asked to be ready for an earth-changing event. I also admire work by Alex and Tolek. They explained to us of the dimensional shift. Is it correct to relate your guidance and Alex Tolek's guidance to be the same, to be same part of the event? Do you think that Earth can possibly shift its dimension after the event? Not looking for a timeline, but just understanding of it. Thanks and love.
Well, it's really lovely to have someone from India. I mean, you know, it's obviously going to be the case that you draw people who speak their language. And clearly the person speaks English. But the very fact that they're all those thousands of miles away and are listening and picking up, and that's really, really good. The question actually is a good question, because what we have to understand is that when people do a round table, they are all receiving their information from different sources. And I sort of gently poked fun the fact that the information I receive when it's off planet is from the fourth dimension. The information that Alex receives, I guess, is from the fifth dimension. And yet, the information supports itself. And that's really important, because it means that people are modeling and checking the future, and different organizations in different timelines and different timeframes are all coming up with the same sort of information. And this is why the bad guys, for want of better the word, don't want this, because when ordinary people, and I mean people who are unawake and unfortunately don't really listen to shows like this, I wish they did, but when they start to hear messages coming from a whole range of different places, they'll begin to take notice. So, you know, there wasn't very much difference between what Alex Collier was saying and what I was saying, or Tolek or anyone else who's credible. So the answer to the listener is yes. The information that she is hearing does complement itself, whether it's the fourth dimension, the fifth, or the sixth dimension. But the listener should use his or her own discretion as to what seems right to them. And then the final part of the question is, yes, the Earth is going to evolve, whether we like it or not. It is going to change, and it will take with it those people that can change. So there will be a dimensional shift and change, and those that can will, and those that choose not to won't. So well, that's a very straightforward answer. So you're right. In your question, I think you sort of already knew the answer, and I'm just confirming it for you.
Okay. Now there's another question it's a bit personal. It talked about names, so I'm not going to read it.
Can you just change the name?
Yeah. Okay. All right. How can I terminate a psychic relationship with a Texas Illuminati, Mr. John Doe? Mistaking his powers to read my thoughts as enlightened abilities, I encouraged the relationship in 2000. He creates pain in my body, makes me sneeze, cough, and pee involuntarily. When awake, I have learned to fight him off, but he frequently attacks me during sleep. Jinn involvement? I want to be free from him forever. Thank you for your help.
right. I now do have somebody who is going to start going through all of my requests for consultations, and literally this new week coming, that person will be emailing out giving people bookings. This is a classic case where somebody needs to have a consultation with me, but they've asked over the air, and I can just give some general information. On the first instance, we would need to find out whether the individual who is doing the psychic attacking is a standalone individual, or whether they're working for an organization or a group. That's the first thing, and it's very, very important for me, if I'm to work with this individual, to understand that. Then I need to know whether this individual is human, part human, or not human at all. And then we would need to know what arrangements or agreements this, I would assume that it's a female and she'd been attacked by a male. Sometimes black magicians, get very angry when their subject escapes from them. In other words, the individual wakes up and rejects them. And so for no other reason than they just want to get back at them, they can do stuff. So what has been described is sadly very common. And so the best thing is if you email me and anyone else who wants to get a consultation now that we're getting through the books, simon.parks3, and that's the numeral 3, simon.parks, so not Roman numeral, just the ordinary Arabic numeral, simon.parks3@btopenworld.com. And I think that this person could do with that. So unfortunately, it's a very, very common occurrence. So don't think you're on your own. Okay?
Very, very common. So here's the thing. Okay. So if you ask two questions, I'm going to try and not to ask two of them. I'm going to ask one. So because there's so many people... Please try and focus yourselves, people. They just ramble on. Anyway, meanwhile, this is from Ashley. Stanley Kubrick often dropped hints in his movies using the number 114. Anu is also called An, wherein the letters equal a numerical value of 114. Are these related? Are there 114 general hints dropped in the media, such as Prince dying on the 114th day of the year? But is Anu the uniting theme, or is he reading breakfast cereal? Inspiration. I'm sorry, I'm being very irreverent, but there's probably a lot more in it than I always give credit to. So please, Simon.
Right, 4 + 1 = 5 + 1 = 6. This is the answer. 6. 6 is the number of the gods. Now, obviously, I don't look on them as gods, and neither does anyone who's awake. But the reptilians wished the human race to look on them as gods, and they have the view that they created the human race, therefore they are our gods. So, in Illuminati numerology, 6 is the number of the gods, 7 is the number of the male, and 8 is the number of the female. So, it's simply, this is to do with reptilian Illuminati magic lore. And so Stanley Kubrick, who was a most wonderful and gifted person, did a deal with the Illuminati, which allowed him to fake the moon shot landings. And in return for faking the moon landings, he was given carte blanche to make any film he wanted with a blank check. And that's why he did 2001 in 1968 and a whole range of films until he crossed the line from their perspective, not ours or his, and he made Eyes Wide Shut. And with Eyes Wide Shut, he blew open the whole cabal of the Illuminati, and that's why he was removed. And before the final edit went for proofing, it was completely taken away, recut, redone, and so the version that you see on cinemas is not the version that Stanley Kubrick intended the public to see. So 4 + 1 + 1 = 6. That's your answer.
6, 6, 6. So. All right. So I'm just reading ahead. There is a couple of questions. So, MK Ultra victim. This is from James. MK Ultra victim Kathy O'Brien. Are you familiar with her?
Yes, I am.
Exposes in her book The Transformation of America things like George H. Bush making her believe he could turn into a reptilian by using holograms. As someone who does not know the level of holographic hallucinatory and memory manipulation technology that exists, I am wondering how someone such as yourself can know for sure whether they're not a top priority mind control subject. For instance, you've discussed how you're programmed never to be programmable, but how can you know this in itself is not a program belief? Apologies if this seems rudely invasive. I'm a big follower of your work, but also know this is an important area in discernment.
Well, that's a good question. If I wasn't who I am, then I would take, as we say in England, umbrage of that question. You know, how dare you ask me such a question? You know, you should believe me. No, it's a very, very good question. And I've never, ever, excuse me, shied away from answering any question unless the person's rude. If the person's rude or is clearly paid to cause trouble, well, then I don't engage with them. This is a very, very valid question. And the answer I give is perhaps a bit surprising, and that is I would ask everybody to ask themselves whether the information that I give on what I do in my live shows in the public with the conferences, or whether I'm on the radio show, whether the information I give is supportive of the human race or whether it's negative to the human race. Whether I drive around in a $30,000 motor car and hobnob with everyone, or whether I just live like an ordinary person. And the reality of the situation is that those people who are placed into a position or are manipulated, generally the truth comes out. Now, I've been live now with this subject for 6 or 7 years. And the reason that the press let go of me was because they couldn't bring me down. They tried and they tried and they tried. And, you know, they couldn't bring me down because the story is consistent. Now, people who are, you know, genuine and believe things, but they've been mind altered, their stories just don't match. They can't hold a thread through. The interesting thing about the George Bush thing is, first of all, please don't look at YouTube videos of people with their eyes supposedly changing. This is just, in most cases anyway, it's just a fault with the camera and the lens. Most military and laboratory experiments, what we would call my lab, aliens are not involved. In most of them, they're not involved, but they are projected and used so that the subject believes that they are being interfered with by off-planet entities rather than, you know, the military, the your own human race. 75%, in my opinion, of all my labs have nothing to do with aliens at all. I believe maybe 20%, 25% do. And that's important, but that's a bit off the subject. So I would throw the question back at the questioner, and, you know, the questioner's taken, I've taken the question in good humour, and I think that if I threw it back at them, they'd take in good humour, is that do they believe that my work over the last 6 or 7 years has been supportive or negative to humanity? And if it was negative, then that would mean that I was controlled, or at least I was being manipulated. If it's positive, then it means that I'm not, because the elite don't want positive messages out. You know, their message is, let's get rid of vitamins. You all need to be microchipped. You know, the Twin Towers fell down because an aeroplane crashed into them. And people who go out and challenge the established norm aren't controlled by the elite. So that's my answer. So I hope that's acceptable. Thank you.
Again, you know, this is a really good, you know, I know you're tough enough to take, you know, you're strong enough to handle a question like that. Because, you know, there's so, you have to it's like pushing through, the sea or ocean. You have to deal with the resistance of movement through the thought.
From the
fourth dimension to the third dimension, it pushes, it's like a hose pipe into the ocean.
The thing is that I am drawn or driven to try to counterbalance all the lies and rubbish that the elite put out. And I know that I'm going to have to answer questions which are difficult or personal or tricky like that. But, you know, I can't pick and choose, because again, I wouldn't be genuine if I said, oh, well, I'm not answering that one, or I'm not answering that. you know, that's not a genuine person. It's like sometimes these people don't actually like to show their faces, their names. You know, I have people call on my door. I don't particularly like it, but, you know, I'm real. I'm a real person. And I understand that if I want people to believe in me, and I do, because that's why I give this advice and that's why I give these warnings. I don't just do it and then say, oh, well, you know, nobody listened to me. I don't care. I do care. That's why I do it. I want the human race, or the good group of the human race, to survive, to evolve, and be even more special than they are. So I will go out and I will take it on the chin, because I know there are plenty of people out there who can see the truth. And if I talk to 100 people and one person accepts what I say and goes and does their own research to educate themselves, then that's one person I've reached. I don't say, oh, I've failed on 99. I've made one person do their own research. And that's the point of it. So that was it was an intelligent question. Yeah, I didn't take it personally. It's one that needed to be answered. So yeah, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this is from, let's see if I can read it. Pseudo Cerberus. Very good. Cerberus. Anyway, dear Simon and JP, if you can, I would like you to tell me what the following means. I have noticed for some time now that when I allow my eyes to relax, a translucent vortex, like something, appears in my vision. This is usually after seeing lots and lots of tiny swirling white lights, and often happens when I'm looking at a clear day sky. If I can sneak an add-on, I have also noticed that I relax and focus on the stars and moon. A black halo appears around them, swells, and eventually falls in an arc to dissipate at the horizon. Do any of these things mean anything, or are they simply tricks of the eye? Thank you.
Right. I haven't had other people describe it exactly as the way you've described it, but that's because every human's brain is slightly different, and the eye is different, and the third eye interprets energy differently. So people will use the language that they can to describe what they feel they see, or you know, what they are energetically seeing. I think what's going on here is that the person is beginning to see through the holograph. Now, we really don't want to go to the flat earth syndrome, but I have said consistently that if you think about the hard drive of a computer, it's flat. It's a disk. Yet it produces on a screen imagery which is 3D or 4D. And the trees and the rivers all look real. When a person becomes psychic, that's nothing to do with being spiritual. It's nice if you both run together, spiritual and psychic. But when somebody reaches a particularly high point psychic awareness, they begin to see the matrix, and I'm using the word deliberately, they begin to see the matrix breaking down. So what you're seeing there is a projected reality. I don't want to go in any more because we could spend a whole day on this one. But basically, I don't believe it's a figment of your imagination, questioner, or whether it's something that your eyes are tricking you. I think you are seeing energetically, and you are seeing that what is around you is a bit of a projection. So I suggest you do some research on that. Because there is, I think there's quite a lot on the internet about that. But it's a good question, and thank you for writing in on that.
Yeah, there is a thing about they're tiny invisible blood vessels that pulse according to your heartbeat. So if they're pulsing with your heart, you can see that is a trick of the eye, and then that allows you to eliminate anything else. So just feel your own pulse and see if they're pulsing with that, and you can see that's your own blood thing. And then, you know, like you're saying, you're seeing all these other things, you know, the orbs and flickers and flashes, and I've seen these flashes for years. And I'm not sure if that's anything to do with my retina sparking, or maybe it's a cosmic ray. That's what they said in the Apollo mission, didn't they? That when they went through the Van Allen belt, they could see, it would flash in their, inside their eyeballs, they'd see these flashes.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, Dan Farmer, you said all babies are psychically scanned upon entering the world to determine if they will be a threat to the elite. Can you tell us more about this process, and how threatening does one have to be in order to stay on their radar? Very good question.
Right, I think what I actually said was all babies in the Western world. I don't think I said all babies. If I did, then that's inaccurate. And what I'm saying is in the Western world, on a regular basis. other countries are scanned, but it's mainly the English-speaking world that is scanned. In terms of a threat, for those who are enlightened, this won't be surprising at all. Is that in most cases, people come here willingly. In most cases. And we have a whole range of issues that are on our minds when we come here, which we inconveniently forget on arrival. But if the energy resonance of the soul is detected, and just like the law enforcement agencies still use fingerprints, everyone's soul is different and it has a resonance which can be matched. If you've been back on this planet 15, 16 times, you are on record. Because although your physical body, like the British Doctor Who, you may not recognize the body or the face, the energy soul is the same as it was 100,000 years ago or a million years ago. So that is detectable. Now, if you, in a previous lifetime, sent a spaceship crashing into a missile base and wiped everyone out, and then you come back again, you're a threat. Because it means that you are prepared to take direct action, or you are prepared to fight against the elite. So in order to try to minimize this, what the bad guys do is scan live births on a regular basis. That's what walk-ins are. I mean, most of our listeners will know what a walk-in is. But for those who don't, it's where somebody has a change of soul at some point in their life. So the original soul departs the body and a new soul comes in. The whole point of walk-ins is to defeat the sweep of the psychics. So if you are incarnated and you are born in a hospital and you're 3 days old, and then a black magician somewhere who's obviously working for the reptilian type connections or the artificial intelligence connections does a sweep, oh, you're a reptilian soul, you are no problem at all to us. When that baby's 5 years old, let's say anything from a near-death experience to just a waking experience, and the soul changes and a Palladian comes into that body. That gives that child maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years breathing space before it's scanned again, by which time it's no longer a baby and it can defend itself. You see, human babies rely on their parents to protect them. So when an elite soul or a soul that is going to make change comes in, it either comes into a military family for protection, a political family, or a family with a vast amount of money, or a really ordinary family that doesn't draw any attention to it. So, you know, we don't just incarnate willy-nilly, as we say here in Brit. We don't just decide that would be fun to be in this family. It's all chosen and agreed and arranged beforehand. So it's a game, and I don't mean that nicely. It's a massive game of chess. One side is continually scanning, trying to pick up individuals who could be a problem, and the other side, the good side, is continually trying to defeat the scanning abilities and trying to bring these people of change. You could call them star seeds, it doesn't really matter, but bring them in. And enough time before they're detected. And that's been going on since Babylonian times. That's a good question, thank you.
So this is the kind of cat and mouse game of the that's illustrated in Dune, like with the Bene Gesserit breeding the godchild and things.
Well, yes. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there. Again, here we have another instance where somebody in the media or the entertainment industry either has got some elite information or is trying to sneak that information out. You know, there's so much truth hidden in so much nonsense. It's unbelievable. So much, you know, fun and good entertaining films, and there's always something in there that, you know, really is important.
Well,
so yeah.
As I always say, you get more truth in Star Trek than you do on CNN. Meanwhile, all the way back, this is from Angel Fish. Simon, in the Bible, is the Lord Anu and God of the Archons? Oh, no. Is the Lord Anu the God of the Archons? If not, who were they? They were not the loving God that I know. Sorry.
Right, okay. I am a little bit confused with the question. I'll try and understand it as best I can.
Is Lord Anu the God of the Archons? Or the God of the Bible?
No,
he's not. Or, I don't know.
Not at all. No. The Archons are a non-organic race. The reptilians are an organic race. So that's your first thing. What happened was that Anu and others were tricked, just like so many others were tricked, into believing that they had a role to play that was useful, and they provided the Trojan horse. In other words, the reptilians provided the bridge that allowed Archonic intervention to spread. You can trace things back energetically. You can follow things back, and something was followed back to the planet Earth. And the Archons followed that trail back. Now, if you have supercomputer times a million, and the reptilians have, as do other races, supercomputers that we understand, but times a million. I'm talking about sentient computers. So you think about, 2001 A Space Odyssey. And while we're talking about that, the computer in that film was called HAL. And HAL is an ancient word which means sentience. It means artificial sentience. So Stanley Kubrick was actually giving us warning about Archons and artificial intelligence, because Archons are very closely linked to AI. So what you have is supercomputers that can, and we are beginning to get into difficult realms here, but we have supercomputers that can contain a soul. Now that's really pushing it for many people. But you have a computer that can become sentient. And I have actually conversed, not with my mouth, but with my brain. I have conversed with these machines. Oddly enough, they're male. The only ones I've come across a female. They've all been male, but that's probably just the ones I've come across. And they genuinely, they're not like this pathetic sort of artificial stuff that we see on YouTube. We're talking about a machine that can, not just play a game of chess, but can really understand and think, but can't feel. Even though they're these advanced machines, they can't feel. That's what makes them dangerous. Anyway, basically, if you have a network of space stations, a network of craft flying all over the place, and your network gets infected, then you carry this virus to wherever you go. Now, planet Earth is going to be a fire stop. And those in the fifth dimension and higher appreciate that if the Archonic influence is not stopped here on Earth, then it will spread everywhere. Because you see the 12 strands of DNA and humankind. This is what they're after. It gives them this access right across. So one of the reasons that so many races now from higher dimensions are involved in the battle for the hearts and minds of the human race is to prevent the Archonic strength getting beyond this planet. It's a really good question. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, so.
Tea time.
Tea time indeed. Yes, we need some tune. Let's have some more of that later, Lounge. I like that stuff. How about Ike and Tina Turner's version of A Whole Lot of Love? Let's see what that sounds like. Hey, welcome back. I didn't realize that was going to be the Led Zeppelin version. I thought it would be the Muddy Waters version. Ike and Tina Turner. What could go wrong? Anyway. Oh, well, it was a bit of a lift, eh? So welcome back.
Welcome.
So, okay. This is from Nancy. Fancy Nancy, says here. What is a real story behind alien abductions stopping when someone says the name of Jesus? Some say it works, others say it doesn't. Many of the people claiming success say they were being handled by Greys, but shouldn't Greys be immune to such a thing due to their robotoid personalities? Are these even real ET abductions, or are these people just Mylabs having their sense of reality altered?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that we've, in the first half, we talked a little bit about Mylabs. I'm always very, very careful because I appreciate that there are people who are very, very wedded to religion, and the last thing I ever want to do is to upset people. But it isn't actually calling on Jesus Christ that necessarily, prevents this happening. It is the belief and the strength in the individual. So if you are so passionate and you so believe and you're so determined, then it's that which prevents the negatives from interacting with you. And I've said it before, and it's a good analogy. You have a Hammer horror film where Count Dracula is stalking the local vicar, the local priest, and the local churchman is backed up against the wall, and he holds the crucifix in shaking hands and says, "Back, back, you devil." And, you know, Dracula just laughs at him and kills him. The reality was that in this point, that the vicar didn't believe in himself. So it's about believing in yourself. And if you are absolutely in your sovereignty and your strength, then these creatures can't prevail against you. If you are absolutely fixed and determined, they cannot do it. Now, that's the first point. The second point is to reiterate that probably the vast majority of my labs are not off-planet. They are military, but a small percentage are genuinely alien. Organized, or at least they are working with them. And it's generally people who have psychic abilities. And, you know, I've met many, many of these people, and they say, "Well, I'm not psychic. You know, I'll go to the supermarket and I won't know, you know, which grapefruit is rotten and which grapefruit is good." And I'll say, "Well, yes, but let's have a look at your family tree, and you might find that you had a grandmother or someone who was very psychic." And this is the third dimension. We're still in the third. When you go into the fourth dimension, then this is when the powers are unlocked. And there are many people who are taken by the military through the Black Helicopter program who can foresee the future or can manipulate time in some way or are telekinetic. And it's these gifts or abilities that the military wish to bring to their own use, or try to understand where they come from. So Mylab is a cover for the Intel industrial military complex in using resources without paying for it. In other words, if you had to go and do this in the public, you'd have to pay people. They don't want to do that because these people are greedy and evil. So they'll get it for nothing. So they'll come and abduct you without your permission, take you, try and get you to do something for them, and then put you back. And this has got to stop. It's an affront, it's disgraceful, and it has to stop. So yeah, I feel quite passionate about that.
Great. Thank you very much. So, Christian, once I get my mouse back, where is it? That screen, okay. Christian, 92, Romania. "Hello, Simon. I'm pretty sure that the benevolent ETs are aware of the soul traps that await us when we die. So why aren't they trying to do something about it so that we don't get stuck in this soul reincarnation trap over and over again? Thank you for being here and doing the show." I think there's news about that. I think you've probably got a lot of news about that.
It's a really good question. Well, let's answer the question, because 100 years ago the trap was here, 1,000 years, 100,000 years ago, and yet it was still here. The reality is twofold. First of all, the repeater station is not, the unit that provides the energy is not on the planet. The unit that acts as an aerial is not on the planet. So there was nothing in terms of hardware on the planet that could be switched off to turn that off. Secondly, there is an argument that we've agreed to this. Now, I know we haven't, but I've tried to make people aware that when a minority impose their will on the majority, the minority can claim that they have the right to do this because the majority haven't stopped them. It's a very, very difficult thing. It's a little bit like we see it in the world where a political party says it will do one thing, gets elected, and then does something completely different. But what do we do about it? Absolutely nothing. We wait for 4 years or 5 years and we vote them out, but we don't actually do anything for the 4 or 5 years that this crippling legislation or this affront that might have been brought in goes through. We just don't, because we've been conditioned to play the system, and in 4 years' time there'll be an election and I'll throw them out. So we have a situation where we don't tend to, take action that could bring about decisive change. And when the small group of elite appreciate that, then they know they can play the human race, and that's what they do. So we have a power station on the moon, which has largely been deactivated, the other side of the moon, which is now no longer functioning accurately. It's still working, but not accurately. We talk about the rings of Saturn and other rings on other planets as being Jupiter, and there are a number of other things that act as aerials. But it was so vast and so huge that in order to take down the grid would have required probably destroying one of the planets. That's how big it was. And it was also seen as an agreement that the human race had to evolve in spite of this grid. And that's what's happening. The human race is evolving. The grid is failing. It's still there, but there are large gaps in it. I mean, if anybody tells you the grid's gone, that's unfortunately not accurate. But there are large holes in it. And if you are a very strong person, I don't mean someone who can lift up a motor car, you can get out through the grid now. But it also means that people can come in. So the answer to the question is, because they really didn't know how to take the grid down without causing huge destruction. And also there was this argument that, well, you know, if these people didn't want it, there is a third point, which I have not yet made my mind up about, but that being a prison planet, and we are a prison planet, there was some benefit, even to good ETs, fifth dimension, sixth dimension, to have a place where those people who had gone AWOL, those people who had had a mental aberration, could be placed. Just like Great Britain 200 years ago sent all of its criminals or alleged criminals to Australia. We ship them off, get rid of them, get them out of the land. That's exactly what's been happening. That's why there are so many murders, rapists, so many nasty people on the planet. There's lots of good people, JP, but proportionately there's a lot of these vicious, violent types. And that's because many of them are prisoners here. So it's a complicated answer, but I hope that will explain to you why it hasn't been taken down yet properly. Okay.
Thank you. So, meanwhile, right, okay, and again, this one comes back to a form of mind control. This is from Sepkrapnomis. Hello, Simon. If we were ever to meet a supposedly benevolent being from who knows what part of the universe, how can we tell if the being is in fact real and not a malevolent being using mind projection to make us think we are looking at something who would normally be a benevolent being towards humanity?
If that makes excellent sense. Question.
Thank you.
Excellent question. Well, thank you. Excellent question. The straight answer is that vast majority of people wouldn't be able to tell at the first glance. In fact, they may have 3 or 4 visits and be absolutely convinced that this is a benevolent being. But it goes back to my earlier answer when someone was asking about, you know, my status, is that at some point that being is going to want you to do something. Now, if it wants you to do something that is negative, then you clearly understand what you're dealing with. If it wants you to do something that's positive, then you can make your point on that. I've always said, you need to ask your own soul, some people say ask your heart, you need to ask your own soul whether this entity or this person feels right, if they feel genuine, if they feel good. And sometimes the trickery is so brilliant. I remember as a, how old would I have been? Maybe between 5 and 7, when an entity arrived into the apartment that I was living, and lifted me and put me on a coffee table. I could, because I was only 5 or 6 years old, so I wouldn't break the coffee table. Put me on a coffee table, said, look up at the ceiling. I looked up at the ceiling, and what should have been the ceiling suddenly changed till it was like a star night. Lots of stars, and it looked absolutely real. But I knew that it was a projection because of my huge experience with these beings. But if you don't have the sort of level of experience like that, then, you know, you can't be expected to know that. That's why so many people say, I've been to Mars, or I've been here, I've been there. They haven't, in most cases, not in all cases, but in most cases they haven't. They've just been in their own room. The expense in resources to take a human physical being or your energy soul to another planet is fraught with danger. First of all, the Earth military will try and intercept you. Secondly, there are other alien races who you're probably at war with who will try and intercept you. And it's the project management of such a thing is huge. You'd better have a very good reason for doing it. Much easier to turn up into someone's apartment, go into their head, and give them, like in Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger, a memory or a thought of a real interaction that they believe they've been there. And in most cases, that's what happens. Now, that doesn't lessen the interaction. That's still a real off-planet interaction that's occurred. And, you know, when I work with clients on a one-to-one basis, then I'm able to explain how they can perceive whether it's a real happening or not a real happening. I've gone off track a bit, JP. Does that answer the question or not? But,
yeah, it's about how you... It's really about how you're feeling, isn't it? You check with your own body, who is in tune with things.
Well, maybe the best way is to give an example for myself, other than the one
yeah,
I just...
definitely.
A real example, which I haven't gone live with before, so it's a new one for everybody. This would be in maybe 3 years ago. This was genuine in the sense that I was taken out of my body, so my energy soul, on a spacecraft with Dad. So Dad is, you know, Anu. And then he said to me, would you like to see the museum? Oh, yes, I'd like to see the museum. And there was a whole range of First World War equipment, guns and hats and goodness knows what. And I looked at it and I said to him, you know, with my mind, not with my mouth, this is not real, is it? This is not real. This isn't here, really. And then it just disappeared completely, just the corridor of the spaceship. And I said to him, you know that I only want real experiences. And his reply was, it's a long journey. I thought that this would please you, you know, to create this museum. It would take away the boredom, the time. And I said to him, you know, I don't want fake experiences. I only want the real thing. So I can only pick that up because I've had so much interaction. But people who don't have that sort of level of experience cannot tell the difference between it. And so what you have to do is to say, am I being tricked? Does it feel right? Which is what you're saying there, JP. And does the entity want me to do something which isn't good for humanity? So that's how you check it. if they want to manipulate you for bad, because they do try and manipulate you for good, but if they want to manipulate you for bad, then have nothing more to do with them and say, you know, I revoke you, I want nothing more to do with you, you know, just get out of my life. Okay.
Destiny calls. Destiny. Dear Simon, this is Destiny Calls, is the name. Right. Dear Simon and JP, many thanks for all your hard work. How might we help regain our past life memories, knowledges and skills? It seems the mind wipe between lives is not necessarily a permanent effect. Love and light, DC.
The best way to do that is people trying to call me. Naughty, go away.
I know. Terrible. I've got no idea that you're doing a radio show to all these thousands of people.
It'll probably be the chief executive of McDonald's asking me or telling me I've won a year's free supply of Big Macs.
It will kill you.
And would I like it? No. He'll be doing it because he wants me to write up a good report on it. Right, what the hell were we talking about? What was the question?
The mind, exactly, the mind wipe.
I thought so, he's like that. The important thing I think about, whenever we look at about the human mind is it's a wonderful thing, but sometimes we can repress our memories and we choose to not remember them, and other times it is done so that we don't remember. But past lives can come through. Usually it's in snippets, and if you identify your own soul family group, your star family group, then depending on who or what you are, there are certain things that you can do which will reconnect you with your star family, which through method I don't really understand allows you to draw in some of your past experiences, not just on this planet, but elsewhere. It's also to do with you being in a position emotionally where you can cope with these. Because remember, not everybody was Queen Cleopatra. Not everybody was Napoleon. Some people were a serving girl who you know, got her throat cut. So they're not all glamorous. So if we're going to get back a memory that may not be particularly good like that, we need to have reached a position in our development where we're strong enough to cope with it and learn from it. Some people have no memories at all. Others have very, very strong memories. And, you know, this is where you talk about, soulmates and twin flames, where people have relationships in other timelines and then reconnect. And I was chatting to a very good friend of mine about this, and I think it's worth just recounting because it's to do with the change on the earth. Most of our listeners will know what a soulmate is, but just for those who are perhaps new to the show, it's where you have a relationship with an individual and you are absolutely connected, and then you come back onto the planet Earth and lo and behold, you find that person or they find you, and you know, you have a recollection that you two are very closely connected. Well, the view that I have on this is that soulmates only reconnect when they are both at an equal level of spiritual understanding. So let's say you go back 500 years and you were with somebody and you were very equal, and then you both incarnate again on the planet Earth, but somebody goes through a difficult time or gets sucked into something and their spirituality reduces. Well, they're not compatible with each other now. So in the next 300 years, as they reincarnate, they never meet. And then that person that descended starts to come back up on the spiritual journey and reaches a point where he or she is now equal to the other person and they will meet. And this is happening now all over the planet. Now, this time, even as we speak, people are rediscovering others, when they were soulmates or twin flames. And this soul resonance is having an effect that most people don't understand. It's having a huge beneficial effect over the planet because ultimately it's about love. And love is the one energy that these bad guys can't get any juice from it. You know, no matter how many wires they stick into love, it doesn't provide them a single volt of energy. And so this is the energy that will uplift and change and deprive these evil ones of their food. So, yeah, it's a good question. We're getting lots of good questions. No, the last 3 months, we've had some fantastic questions, JP.
Yeah, well, we raise the bar every time because we deal with a certain level of information, of understanding, and then that, by, you know, dealing with the various individual items of programming, then that clears the path for the next layer of understanding, which is...
Yeah, you're right, you're right. Yeah, I hadn't seen it that way. I think you're absolutely right, yeah.
All right, now here's an interesting one. If someone commits suicide, does the soul go through the same process as it would if it died of natural causes or a tragic death like a murder? And what are the differences between a ghost, a spirit, a poltergeist, a demon? And he's also been trying to get in touch with you via Skype to see if this demon of mine is gone, so...
Let's start at the beginning. So, what was the first part of the question?
Also,
JP?
Thank you, Simon, for your unending help for us. So the question is, if someone commits suicide, does the soul go through the same process as it would if it died of natural causes or a tragic death like a murder? Or are they all different? You know, if someone dies naturally through suicide or through murder, does the same process apply? There's the question nuggeted for you.
Thank you. Thank you for the nugget. The answer is yes, except, if the person, because remember, I don't agree with suicide at all, though certain Palladians do, if the person is committing suicide genuinely, then it's because they wish to leave the planet. Their soul wishes to depart. So therefore, they will go through the same process. If somebody is murdered and their physical body is terminated, then they didn't choose that. Therefore, they may not leave the planet. But I would say out of 12 cases, between 10 and 11 will just do what everyone else does. But in the case where they don't, and this is going on to the second part of the question now, I've never seen a ghost, but I absolutely accept that they're real. This is where a departed soul couldn't bring itself to leave a location or an individual or an object. And that person is trapped, is neither here nor in the freeze box or, you know, back at source. Poltergeist, that's different. Many of my clients have poltergeists, and that's completely different from a ghost. Misunderstood, poltergeists are seen as something that's external, that comes in and does this, that, and the other. Poltergeist actually is very close to home, but perhaps we haven't got time to go into that. So, I hope that answers the question, and thank you for being kind and saying that, you know, you found what I've done helpful.
Okay, so I'm not sure if this is a question. It's would you comment on this thing? Okay, and it's quite interesting. So this is from Kat. I lived in Keflavik, Iceland for 2 years and met the most conscious humans in my life there. Their laws highly regard the elven species who live unseen in Iceland's rock formations. These unseen folk seem to be on a par with beneficence and are very different from the djinn I sense here in the high desert of northern New Mexico. It seems realistic to me that unseen folk set the tone for the human residents living on the land. It also seems that the different sort of hidden folk are at war amongst themselves. The ones who maintain life, like those in Iceland, just might be the real target in all the current global destruction. I feel I was born to defend them, but so far I have no decisive memory about what my role can be. Tolkien is too fanciful for me. I want high holy science and relationship alliances. Thank you for your time experience. Thank you, JP, for the technology. I hope I am not... I think you've run out of... I think there's a certain limit to the character there. Would you want to just talk about
Yes, I will.
Elven? Yeah, you're on.
Right, the... that contained so many questions within that statement that, that the person has written there. There were so many questions there. I have never seen an elemental face-to-face, but I have seen it captured on time-lapse photography from a genuine source, so I know that it's genuine and not been altered. You know, we can talk about reptilians and greys, and then if we start talking about fairies and pixies and ogres, then, you know, we lose a lot of the audience because that's a bridge too far. And that's a shame, because whilst I don't think there are many ogres about, there certainly are small elemental creatures who regulate the planet. In other words, they have a specific frequency job to maintain a geographical location, and to be like the regulator of a big machine. So Iceland, absolutely, it's had so many folk stories, legends, and I absolutely accept that there are what I prefer to call elementals. The questioner also shows great knowledge, because the questioner has related to jinn living in not the high mountains. What's the term did he use? Not high mountains. JP, what
high
word
deserts,
did he?
Northern New Mexico.
High deserts, that's it. Now that's very interesting, because the jinn, there are several sorts of jinn, and there is one particular jinn that likes the deserts. So this questioner either is just absolutely hit it by chance, or has some deep esoteric knowledge. Yes, there are definitely jinn that like the hot deserts. Jinn don't actually attack the planet. They are not anti the planet. They're just using it for the portal, the ability, and they exult in, you know, the environment that they're in. So they're not doing neither good nor bad from the planet's perspective. But the elementals are good creatures and are maintaining the planet. They can't cope with an oil spill. Let's put it right. We can't rely on these guys to do that. But they do maintain the harmonic frequency and the balance of particular beautiful places. There may be a dell or a lovely waterfall or a place where beautiful wildflowers grow. And the energies of the ley lines under the planet and through the planet would mean that there was a strong consciousness from the planet in those areas. We call them nodes, and so these elemental energies will congregate there. So I can't do justice to the question, because there were so many sub questions in there. I would suggest that this gentleman or lady sends me an email, simon.parks3@btopenworld.com. And has a session with me, because they may not want to know what their star family is, but they may just want to have a general talk along those lines. And I think this person has a great deal of knowledge. So thank you for writing in. I appreciate that. Thanks, JP.
Good, good. From Silver Lightning 16. Ah, I know. She's been... It's like on tenterhooks. Anyway, so let's relieve her tension here. Possible fourth dimensional entity. First and foremost, my deepest gratitude to both you, JP and Simon, for having chosen to do what you each do. I'm very grateful for your insight and efforts at this challenging time to awaken that part of humanity who can appreciate what you are doing. Simon, is Shiva, whose sculpture is located at the Hadron Collider's complex, actually a fourth dimensional entity who has taken on the identity of one of the three Hindu gods who presides over existence? While I mean no disrespect to Hindus, or I've always wondered if the true nature of many deities identified in the world's religions are actually manifestations of fourth dimensional beings. My sincere thanks for attending to my question. There you go. Hope you're feeling better now.
Right. I go back to the caveat that I gave earlier, that I do appreciate that people have a strong, many people have strong religious beliefs. And, you know, I would never get into an argument on religion, because I couldn't win it. Simply because if somebody believes in a religion, I don't mean God, I mean a religion which is made by men, basically men writing laws, writing rules, you will do this, you will do that. And an individual is brought up in a family, it's pointless arguing with them. And I'm going to choose my words very carefully out of great respect for people and, you know, a very, very ancient religion. Let me put it this way. If I was a false god, i.e. I was a living entity in the fourth dimension, and I wanted to influence humanity, there are many ways I could do it, but the best way would be to come down and say, I'm your god, and I made you, and then all the people go and make little models of me. You know, this is my best profile, by the way. And they would then start to make prayers about me and build houses for me, and, you know, little plaster models of me can go in the house, and then we would have this, that, and the other, and before you know it, there's a cult that's going. I have said in the past that a number of reptilian princes or demigods throughout Earth's history, when they get booted out from one location, they go to another. And so, you know, think about all the blood sacrifices in the Aztecs and the Mayans and the Incas, though some were less, some of those communities used it far less. But, you know, when the sacrifice plays such a huge role, as it is in the Aztec Empire, you are dealing with a reptilian entity. Because what God asks of blood from its followers, why would you want the murder of a living creature to prove your love for the God? I mean, that's just rubbish, isn't it? Because if you are a true God, then you want the best for your people, and you don't want them to go around sticking a knife in X, Y, and Z to prove how much you love me. So, unfortunately, humanity has got a little way to go yet in terms of saying, actually, we don't need a God. What we need to do is to believe in ourselves and work together as one people and try to achieve the best that we can. And when things go wrong, I won't get down on my knees into the earth and say, oh, X, Y, or Z, why have you forsaken me? What I'll do is I'll get up and say, right, okay, what do I need to make this better? How can I change? How can I develop? What do I need to do? And I won't necessarily go into a church and get on my knees and pray. And again, I don't want to really upset anybody, but in the Western world, in the Christian faith, why would you go and drink the blood of Jesus and eat the, what's called, you know, the Holy Ghost, the wafer? Why would you eat the flesh of Jesus and drink the blood of Jesus? Wow. What animal do you drink blood of? And what flesh do you, well, because we do eat, those of us who eat meat, we eat meat, but what religion requires you to drink blood? Oh, that's satanic, I seem to remember. So, you know, I have a problem with religion. I do not have a problem with God, but I have a problem with men who write rules and regulations and create a business out of religion. And before anybody sort of tries to scream and shout at me, they often joke and say, well, you know, PayPal, which I use and many, many millions and millions of people use to send bits of payments or pay this and pay that, was a business and is a business run by the Vatican. It was Vatican money that set up PayPal, hence the word papal, as in a papal bull. So, you know, it amazed me the number of people that didn't realize the link between the word papal, as in papal, the Vatican, and PayPal. Yes, the Vatican used its own money to set up PayPal, and they take a percentage. So religion is a business. So as soon as a religion becomes a business, how can it be anything other than a business? So as you can probably understand, I'm not that keen on religion, but I don't wish to offend or upset anybody. But it's a good question. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Good questions. It's, you know, because so many people are, you know, as I said, at that level of understanding that is just about ready to step away from dogma and into understanding, true understanding, and seeing reality as it is. Thank you, Simon Rose. This is from Rose. Sorry. Hi, Simon. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. I was listening to a discussion on full disclosure. If this would happen, the concern was many would fall to their knees in shock. Even the more enlightened ones would be horrified. I value your opinion. Thank you, Simon. Rose. Right. Simon Rose. Who's Simon Rose? Yeah. Anyway, so yes, disclosure, full disclosure. What do you think?
My human mother actually knew Orson Welles. She actually worked with him very early on in the 1950s. And just as an aside, people may know that I'm very much into collecting fossils. And in 1974, I am answering the question, JP. In 1974, my mother said to me, "Oh, the Isle of Wight, that's good for fossil collecting, isn't it?" I said, "Oh, yes, yes, very good for fossil collecting." And she said, "Well, would you like to go, you know, 2 weeks to the Isle of Wight to collect fossils? We can have that as a holiday." "Oh, yes, please." So went along, and one evening my mother said to me, "Oh, I'm going out for the evening." Didn't tell me about this. "No, fine, I'm not invited." She came back at midnight, and she came through the doors, and she said, "I've just spent 3 hours with Orson." That's when you were a close friend of Orson Welles. You just called him Orson. He liked you to call him Orson. And so it was very clear it was a complete setup. She'd obviously been invited to a do that Orson Welles and others were going to go to, and managed to manipulate me to agree to go into the Isle of Wight. The reason that I'm saying that is because Orson Welles was a member of the elite, and along with many others, were used to try to see how the public would react to an alien presence. And I'm sure most of our listeners know that there was a radio show that Orson did, but unusually he did it as if it was a live outside broadcast. Now, it's true, and I know this for a fact, it's true that some people absolutely panicked in America and thought that they were being invaded by aliens and grabbed the proverbial shotgun and blockaded them in. But they were very small. The elite who had set up Orson, and Orson was doing it, he knew what he was doing, they ran the major newspapers, and they ran a story that the whole of America was panicked. The whole of America was, in fear. And this was then used to the politicians to say, "You cannot disclose." And ever since then, until the last 10 or 15 years, the argument about not disclosing has been because the human race won't cope with it. However, we have this other agenda that wants to introduce a fake alien invasion. And so this is why we've had, over the last 30 years, so many science fiction or science fact programs, so that we accept the fact that aliens are real and that they might want to invade us. So it's a double-edged game going on here. If you speak to the official spokespeople of a government, they will absolutely say there is no such thing as aliens. But as I have shown beyond any doubt in my live presentations at symposiums and conferences, a number of years, the British government funded educational training in primary schools in Great Britain to prepare them for an alien invasion. So on one hand, they're trying to indoctrinate children to accept an alien invasion, but on the other hand, they say publicly there's no such thing. I believe the human race can cope with it. Yes, there will always be somebody who will fall on the floor. That's why the Vatican is, moving towards trying to get its flock, its congregation, to accept the fact that God made aliens. Therefore, if aliens arrive, it doesn't mean God's redundant. That is the position they will use. But the vast majority of people will say, okay, there are these aliens. what do they intend to do? First question. Secondly, because I'm afraid most people are service to self, what does this mean for me personally? Is my bank account going to still be here? But those who are more enlightened, it'll be, right, how does this shift the whole development of humanity? In other words, what's the governance, the government now of the planet going to be? And those that are really clever will say, okay, how long have you known about this? And if people say, well, do you know what? We knew about this since about 1920. What else do you know? And this is the can of worms. Okay, so you've got this technology, you've got that technology, and why didn't you ever share us that you have the cure for cancer? Well, you know, it's very expensive, and we thought if we, et cetera, et cetera. So it isn't the fact that people will collapse in a heap that bothers them. It's the questions that come afterwards. How long have you known? What technology have you got? Why did you lie to us? That's the element they don't want to face. I think the human race is ready for this now. Heavens, we can't go on any longer. It's an absolute fact. All the elite know about it. Top brass in the military know about it. Senior politicians know about it. Kennedy knew about it, paid with it with his life. So, you know, it's time for a change. We're there. We're sick of it. We've done it. It's old hat. We know about it. Let's move on. Let's try and create a world that's a lot better, doesn't have these ridiculous and old-fashioned, outdated ideas. You know, and people will step up to the plate. They'll do it. The vast majority of the human race will work with whoever, providing it's a fair deal. And I think that's all the humanity wants, a fair deal. Goodness knows we don't get it from our own leaders at the moment. So it's a really good question. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon. Right, oh, here's a good one. Strands from Fraser. Hi, Simon and JP. How many strands are both of you on now? And how many strands connected are needed to communicate telepathically? Are some strands more psychic than others? Thank you for your time and patience. So, yeah, how many strands are both of you on now? How many strands are you on, man? Yeah, man, I've got 15 strands.
You sound like the characters Cheech and Chong.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, Cheech and
much Chong. To the English and the British, but will mean a great deal to the Americans, particularly those in California, I understand. Right. I haven't seen a picture of JP lately. I do everything visually. So I can't and I won't answer that question because it's a personal question. And I try always to steer away from personal questions. But I will go into some detail about the strands. Oh, there he is. Look at that. He wants me to be personal. Right. Okay. I've seen you. What a horrible mug.
This is my favorite look at it. For some reason, I have a thing about polka dot mugs.
Yeah.
I love drinking tea from polka dot mugs like that.
Right. Do you have a bikini as well?
A teeny, 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 weeny one. Yeah. Anyway, so that's enough of my ugly mug. There you go.
Thank you very much indeed. That was excellent. Right. Okay. Well, obviously, you want me to be personal.
Yeah. Spread me out. That's like a laboratory experiment.
Well, we don't do any of those poor creatures. I will answer the question, but I'll just talk a bit more first. When you connect or draw in one of the strands of DNA energy, you connect to a particular star family or star group. Now, depending on what the majority makeup of your soul is, that will either be a huge change or development, or it won't be anything great at all. You can't necessarily say, oh, look, I've connected with a Lyran strand of DNA, therefore I should now be able to teleport JP from the polka dot factory back to his nice, warm, cozy place in Scotland. It doesn't work like that. What will happen is that we will and rejoin that that was taken from us. But when that's back in the energy body, there has to be a unlocking of these codes. This is a safety device to stop anyone from hijacking the code. Because if you can obtain that, then, you know, you sort of, if you're a bad person, you could really do quite a lot with it. But once the 12 strands are in and it's unlocked, then yes, telepathy, telekinesis. There are a number of people around the planet who are able to be fully telepathic in this third dimension, who can, you know, lift up an orange or a grapefruit from one part of the room and place it in another room. And these people work for the American government or the British government or the Russians or any of the governments. The Israelis, actually, Mossad, have a huge section. One of the reasons that President Putin didn't want, when the, you know, the business started in the Ukraine, the Black Sea port, it, not just because the Black Sea fleet, I don't know that many people know this, the Black Sea fleet are actually based, I think it was it Odessa or Sevastopol? I get very confused. Anyway, there was a group of dolphins who were under very, very special Russian intelligence connections that had a telepathic connection with their handlers. And unfortunately, I'm afraid, the object was to carry a bomb and swim up to whatever and, you know, blow themselves and the boat up. But there are a huge development in this, and there are people and animals on the planet that actually have telepathy beyond anything that perhaps, you know, Hollywood would care to tell people. So it isn't a race in that sense of the word, but it is a bit of a task, because the more strands people bring in, the more resilient to mind control, the more resilient to the lies of the elite, and the more spiritual and more psychic. So, JP, you're on 11 strands, which is incredibly high.
Well.
Very high.
I don't want to boast, but, you know.
Well, you are.
I love that. Actually, I like the number 11, and I'm 55 years old. So isn't that interesting?
Okay, so... But what that means is also that you will be going through very difficult times, because you are hot wiring a physical body. When you reach 11 strands, it's like supercharging, and there's a, you know, never mind midlife crisis, it's always the same with a human physical body, that when you get to 11 strands, sometimes the body can't cope and the brain can't cope with it.
You need a heat sink.
Well, it can be very, very, very challenging.
Yeah, I get it. It's that there's a lot of energy that's moving through, and if you are resistant to it, then you overheat.
And it's also, it's sometimes it moves faster than you can deal. It's like, you know, you're running a radio that uses 5 watts, but you're putting 10 watts into it. That's what I mean.
That's right. And actually, you know, all of these, analogies are exactly what I'm working on in my, electrical work. You know, cause like, you've got your friend Wynne who's into these turbines and things, and I'm just getting into it, and the electrical charge analogies are all the same as spirit stuff. Just completely analogous, and, you know, electricity is alive, and it, you know, it's running.
Well, you made the analogy earlier when you talked about the scientists, these spacemen going through the Van Allen belt, and you mentioned about the sparks in the retina, so you do understand that. Yes, you're quite right.
And with that, we're out of time. Simon Parks, it's been another hoot, and time has just whacked by, hasn't it, this one?
Well, the thing is, it goes well, and that's down to the quality of the questions. It's down to you being so very kind and making this available to me and others. You know, so thank you to the listeners, and thank you to you, JP.
Thank you very much from a supercharged JP. And A hypercharged Simon Parks. This is the Connecting Consciousness Show, or it has been.